have a basketball program that we all expect to compete in the Big Ten and national championships year in and year out.
There's no other way to look at it. It's one of the better jobs in the Big Ten.
Final four!
I didn't think you got me this good, but it feels good!
Welcome on in, everybody. Maddie here alongside Josh, Johnny, and Sam. And we are joined by a very, very special guest, a man who honestly needs no introduction, Illini legend himself, Deion Thomas. Deion, we had you on the show last year. Thank you so much for joining here again. Let's start broadly. I saw that video that Jeremy Werner tweeted out of the celebration with Brad Underwood and the coaches, and it caught you and Brian in the action as well when the final buzzer sounded. I saw you clapping. I saw you cheering alongside Brian. What was that like for you, a fan, an ex-player, an announcer, to experience that right in front of your eyes?
Well, first of all, I'm going to tell you this. My explanation will pale in comparison to what I felt. Sure. Because there's no words to really explain the excitement that I was feeling at that time. My brother was kidding with me. I showed him the pictures here this evening. We were here for my daughter's birthday, and he was like, man, it took you back to 1994, didn't it? I was like, it sure did.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't really... There are no words to explain, but extremely happy, extremely proud, of course. You know, I was on the radio as we were going through that dark period. And it was, you know, complete. I just don't have the words.
Sure.
I mean, if you saw the video, I don't know if you saw the first few seconds, which felt like minutes. I was almost like catatonic. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't move. I was stuck. And hearing Brian in my ears through the headphones is when I was like, oh my God, this is like really happening. You know, and this is when I started to get into the celebration of it all. I mean, absolutely tremendous. You know, I'm the most happy for is for Trent and Demonte.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those guys could have left when John Gross was fired. They did not. They stayed here. They have been the backbone. You know, if you listen to Coach Underwood, when he describes those guys, he'll tell you in a heartbeat that they are the backbone to this university. I mean, to this basketball team, this program, what they do, how they do it, how they go to work every day. I mean, so I think I was more happy for them. But then to watch the crush and everybody just yeah. out on the floor, it really helps you to, you know, gauge how thirsty our fan base really was for something good. I mean, since Brad has been here, it's steadily improved over the years. And it's just kind of somewhat of a crescendo in winning a share of the Big Ten title. So it was great, man. It's just hugely, immensely exciting.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned Trent and Demonte. And so looking at your playing days, you also didn't have the opportunity to play in the tournament your freshman and sophomore year. So do you almost feel like you can relate to guys like Trent and Demonte's journey in a way that us as fans can't, maybe other former players can't, but you sort of have that personal connection to that experience?
Oh, no. That's an excellent comparison because it's a resounding yes. The team that I would have been on would have been the remaining guys from that Flying Illini team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kendall Gill, Bardo, maybe, you know, I'm not going to say maybe. Marcus Liberty told me that if, you know, all of those things around the investigation had to take place, that he would have stayed. So we would have had Marcus Liberty on the team, Andy Kaufman, of course. I mean, so I think, in my opinion, we would have been back in the Final Four.
Wow.
I mean, because the one thing that team was missing was an inside presence after Lowell Hamilton graduated and Irvin Small. So to add me to that would have been great, but to have to miss it because of, you know, pardon my French, but some BS that took place, and to have to miss that, yeah, I can completely feel and understand what those guys were going through or what they felt.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome to sort of get that perspective, and also not just a player, but you're an announcer. Are there other games that sort of stand out, I guess, in terms of that magnitude or that excitement in terms of any games that you've ever called?
Called?
Yeah.
Maybe the win over Michigan State. I guess that was, what, 2 years ago now in Assembly Hall?
Mm-hmm.
But to be honest, that actually paled in comparison to the other night. I mean, the only game that I can even put on that same level, and this is, has to go into my professional career, when we won our first championship with Maccabi Tel Aviv.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
You know, and we filled up, you know, a stadium that fits almost 30,000 people with nothing but, you know, fans and yellow and blue. And then after we won, we're out at the park. And I mean, and there were easily 100,000 people in this park celebrating with us. So that's the only thing that comes even reasonably close to what took place on Sunday.
Wow, that's incredible to compare a championship to that professional experience. I think speaks volumes about, again, like you said, how much this means to our fan base, the people that cover the team, the people that call the games, the people that played. Incredible. And I guess just sort of looking at it from like a macro level, I know that you're involved with the iFund. You're very much so in tune with people in this university. What does it mean, like, for the athletic program in general? It's been tough for the last few years since we got to college and graduated in our 4 or 5 years. We didn't see a tournament. So what does that mean now for the athletic program at large?
Well, I mean, a lot of people don't understand. This Illinois basketball program is the 11th ranked program in the history of the NCAA. A lot of people have no clue that that's what it is, especially your generation and you know, because you guys have never had an opportunity to see the winners. I mean, yeah, there's videotape and things like that, but there's even less videotape of when I play. You know, it's not like today where everything is out there ready for you to just pluck out of the sky, well, out of the cloud. So it's tremendous. I was on the phone with some donors today, and they were talking about how, you know, you guys and younger will be sharing this story with your grandchildren long after we have left this planet. I mean, this plane of existence. That's how big this is. And I mean, and when you sit back and you look at it, then you really realize just how meaningful this is. I mean, it's almost groundbreaking. I mean, shit, it's almost like the discovery of the light bulb.
I love it.
When you sit back and, you know, when you sit back and you look at it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Deion Thomas Edison.
Oh, that's so good. That is incredible. The inventor. Yeah. Absolutely. That's so good. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like we almost don't have a bearing of still what this means to us, right? Sort of still almost numbing, and we don't even understand the significance until many years down the line where we can still reminisce about this experience. But you started calling games in 2016 when the team was kind of, you know, mediocre at best, and there were 3 years where the team really struggled until this run these last few years. And so, again, you're very in tune with the team, is, you know, covering them. Is there a difference in culture, in the environment, aside from maybe just winning and losing or maybe recruiting a little bit better? Like, is there a genuine difference in culture? Has that made a difference?
Oh my God, it's culture, and you guys will find out about this. I mean, you're college students right now. So any business you go into, if your culture is sour, everything else will be sour. Mm-hmm. And your culture is set from the top down. Mike Thomas, who I am fond of, I think he's a really good guy, was different than, say, you know, definitely different than Josh Whitman, definitely different than a Ron Gunther. The culture that Josh set, you know, trickles down through the program. And you can look at it in the people that he hired. The culture that Brad Underwood has set is totally different than that of John Gross, as well as Bruce Weber. It's one based on, you know, not that theirs wasn't based on hard work, but it's based on hard work. It's based on really fighting for and fighting with your brothers that you're out on the court with. It's giving every last effort. As he says, they're everyday guys.
Yeah.
So, and that's the way they practice. That's the way they play. as you can tell, you know, with the various changes of lineups over the years, whoever's working the hardest and does the press and best in practice is the person that's on the floor. Mm-hmm. You know, he really makes guys hold themselves accountable and earn basically everything that is given to them. And that's tremendous. And not to say that the other coaches didn't have some of those same things, but it just wasn't delivered the same way. I mean, we see John Gross, great guy, really laid back. Bruce Weber, great guy, really laid back. As you see and you look at the fire that Underwood
exhibits. Not laid back. Not laid back. I would not describe him like that.
Exactly. That is not two words that you would use to describe him. And I think that's what his players pick up on, you know, and that's what they feed off of.
Yeah, I mean, he's a really tough dude, and I feel like the earlier years and the Gross years and the Weber years, there were a lot of things that didn't go away, and it was always excuses, and Brad's just not an excuses guy. And one thing that I think about is him losing all three assistants in the last year and pretty much just did a line change. What does that speak about him and Whitman, that they were just able to follow up and make a completely different staff and win a Big Ten championship?
Well, I'll tell you this, and this is one of the things that I said to him in the post game. And of course, Coach never takes, you know, he never takes the praise upon himself. He dishes it out and gives it to everyone else. And that was one of the things I said to him. I was like, I don't know how many people or how many coaches in this country could do what you did. And he was like, what are you talking about? I was like, you lose a whole staff.
Yeah.
And then you bring in a bunch of guys that you don't really know or have a relationship with because they fit what it is that you're trying to do and that you want to do. And they fit your culture. There's that word again. They fit your culture and how you want your teams to be. And again, like I said, he kind of was like, Deion, you know, and I'm like, no, coach. You know, when people talk about coaching and they talk about building programs, they need to be talking, you know, putting your name right smack dab in the middle of that, because that's what he did. You know, and I don't know if that comes from the hard work and plowing fields over there in Kansas or his time at Kansas State or the people that he worked for. But whatever it is, he has things pointed in the right direction. And I think you guys would agree. We're moving forward and moving forward fast.
It's been fun to watch. Absolutely.
Yeah, we're always ready for any opportunity at a Pizza Hut parking lot. But let's we talked a lot like macro. Let's talk a little micro about Sunday. First question, you talked a little bit about maybe the BS in the 90s. Was it a little sweeter for you that it was Iowa who we beat to clinch the Big Ten title?
I know this is your podcast, but I'm going to say it. Fuck yes.
Yes, Deion.
Oh, my gosh. Hell yeah.
Yes, it was. I mean, and this is what I said on the radio, and I didn't drop an F-bomb, but I did say this on the radio. Great to win this championship. Great to come back and fight the way they did, but it was definitely great to kick the Iowa Hawkeyes' ass. Yeah. And they're recruiting my daughter right now. I told her I would never, ever wear black and gold. I'd support her to the end of the earth, but I want to kill them every time we step on the floor, man. And so to win this championship against those guys works perfectly fine for me.
I love how obviously your playing days at U of I and professional are no longer, but like that just intensity has not left, right? Like just as an athlete, as an Illini, like it has not faltered for even a percentage point. Like it is just so still orange and blue, so intense all the time, and I like it's awesome.
Well never ever go anywhere. I mean, you should see me when I'm with my Simeon crew. You know, loyalty is loyalty, and I am loyal to the blue and gold, and I am so loyal, as you guys know, to the orange and blue, because without those two institutions, man, I'm not living in Naperville. I don't have the life I have. I have not seen the things that I have seen, experiences. I've not been able to give my family the things that I've given them. I know where my bread is buttered, and I know where the foundation came from. So, we'll never lose the intensity for either of those.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah, that's amazing. Loyalties definitely earned and not given. But let's talk a little bit about just kicking Iowa's ass then. What do you think of the performance of Coleman Hawkins stepping up to guard Keegan Murray and shutting him down?
Man, I'll tell you, he stepped up and played against a guy that was right there for being Big Ten Player of the Year and National Player of the Year. That's how well Keegan Murray has played. You know, he ended the game with a double-double. Mm-hmm. But you shoot 33%, and that means you had to take a heck of a lot more shots to get your average. And, I mean, that was really totally based on the job that Coleman Hawkins has done. And after the game, I talked to him about that very thing because he struggled during the year. And we all know at the beginning of the year when Kofi wasn't playing, he was averaging close to 16 points a game. Kofi came back in the floor of the game. He couldn't find himself. He was, you know, he just wasn't playing very well. The last, say, three to five games, he's really, really stepped up. He's found his focus. And I don't think we win that game if it's not for him. And that's the honest to God truth. What he did on the glass, Underwood said he challenged him to get 12 rebounds. The kid got 11. And he had one of the best defensive performances, as I mentioned, against one of the best players in the country because he was in that boy's jock all night.
Yeah, I saw Isaac Trotter tweeted on Twitter that he went 2-for-13 against Coleman and 5-for-9 against other guys guarding him. So that's just – and that's not just anyone. That's a first-team All-American that you just shut down a NBA lottery pick. So, like, it really feels like the sky's the limit for Coleman.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it is. I've told people this time, and I'm going to say it again. Coleman Hawkins is probably – if NBA guys are grading guys – he's probably the highest graded guy on our team. I mean, to be able to do what he does at 6'10", 6'11", I mean, he defends multiple positions. He can shoot ball, pass the ball, shoot. This year, he even plays some damn point guard. So, I mean, there's not very many players in the country that can do that, let alone in the Big Ten.
Yeah, and I mean, we talk a lot about culture, and it seems like there have been similar talents of Coleman Hawkins on other Illini teams who – in their sophomore slump, just completely lose focus and check out and then end up transferring or end up not contributing. But I feel like that's a huge, like you can point to our culture and say, this dude stayed bought in, worked hard, and then was rewarded and was like a key player on our team for the second half of the Big Ten season.
Oh, no doubt. And that's exactly what he said. He was like, you know, I sat back, I had a conversation with the coaches on what I needed to do in order to get better. And, you know, how many times when, like you said, guys pout, they stop working hard. He did the opposite. You know, he talked to his coaches, he learned from it, and he put in the works. And then there he is right back defending, as we've mentioned, you know, possibly one of the best players in the Big Ten and possible lottery pick and shut him down. I mean, he made Keegan's job hella hard. Yeah. I mean, even those two baskets that he got, those are struggle baskets, you know. So none of that happens if this kid doesn't have the foresight to listen to his coaches. His dad, I know, is a big Brad Underwood fan, and, you know, he's from Chicago, played at CVS, so he understands what it is to learn from some tough coaching because I know his coach. I learned from some tough coaches, so he was ready, and thank God he was able to pass some of that down to Coleman Hawkins.
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes I think we forget how young these guys are when you're 20 years old and you have everyone on Twitter saying, oh, you're this, you're that, you're not that good. After 3 months ago, they were saying you're the best player ever. Like, that really takes a toll on you. And to be mature enough to just stay bought in. It also reminds me of another 20-year-old on the team, Andre Curbelo. And I know much has been made of his up and down play, but how do you think he performed on Saturday or on Sunday?
Oh, he played great. I mean, it's not just that he just played great on Sunday. I mean, since he's been back and he's gotten in better shape, Bello has played really well. I mean, especially on the defensive end. I mean, last year, if you remember, his freshman year, he was kind of a liability. And he has not been that. He's had some really good times playing defense on guys. I thought, you know, he got shafted with a couple of those fouls on Sunday. But if you look at his numbers and the minutes he played outstanding. Mm-hmm. I mean, even cutting down the turnovers, you know, assist to turnover ratio, not to mention the 14 points that he played with. And when he comes on the floor, he brings a different dynamic. You know, the team is different. It's more lively. Now, the fans are a little more lively, too, because they don't know which one they're going to get. And neither do we, but I know I love having him on the floor, and I thought he played extremely well.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a burst of energy. Is it almost difficult to describe the things that he does on radio? Like, how do you describe some of the plays he made on Sunday?
Man, most of the plays, when he makes a play, it's not described in words. It's described in sound.
Yeah.
I mean, you're making sound like, oh my God. I mean, it's stuff like this because you don't see it. I mean, and it's not – people get upset because they're like, oh, he's trying to be a hot dog. I'm like, no, dude's just hooping. That's just him. It's everything he does is so instinctual when he's out there on the court. You know, I want to take my hat off to Underwood for sticking with him, because I know if he played for Coach Henson, boy, he might not have been on the bench. He might have been on the bench sitting next to somebody else, because Coach did not like hot dogging whatsoever. He'd be like, hey, bring out the mustard. We got a hot dog. I mean,
what does that mean? I love it. Is that a basketball term, like being a hot dog?
Well, it just means you're like really flashy and you're trying to make like cool plays.
Oh, being a hot dog.
Like,
okay.
The right.
I quit
plays.
After sixth grade.
Yeah.
Okay. Being a hot dog.
But to him, it's just instincts a lot of times. He's not trying to necessarily like do the coolest play. It's just like, he feels like he can get point A to point B by maybe putting the basketball behind his back and then doing a lap.
Exactly.
Yeah. Why not?
Exactly. It's all instinctual, man. It's by feel. This kid has a feeling that not very many people have. And, you know, and that's what you see out there on the court. It's frustrating at times and it's exciting at others.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of credit to Brad for sticking with him. And we were down 7. And then he scored or assisted 15 of the last 19 points, and really we're down 7, turned that to being up 6. So love that from Andre. But a little bit earlier in the game, we were down 15 and just found a way to claw back, found a way to win. Do you think we don't necessarily talk about how good of a coach and adjustment maker Brad Underwood is when essentially you have to outscore Iowa by 16 for the rest of the game to win that game? And not a lot of teams are able to do that.
Almost no one is able to do that. But, you know, we talk about how good he is at making adjustments. One of the best things that Brad Underwood does is motivate. Is because you've done all your coaching the week prior to the game or the days prior to the game. And sometimes players need motivation, and they need to understand the levels that they have to get to. And it may be beyond the levels that they've been playing at. That's what he's able to do, and I think that's his best strength, is he gets guys to play above who they are, you know, and gets them to believing in what it is that they're trying to do. But, yeah, the adjustments he made were great. As we can see, pretty much flip-flop their Iowa stats going into that second half. I mean, they shot 33% from the floor in the second half, and after shooting over 50 in the first half. I mean, completely different and shut down things in the second half.
Yeah, and one of my favorite motivating things, too, is the take Coleman Hawkins out for 10 seconds when he turns the ball over, yell at him, and then realize, like, we need Coleman in to defend Keegan Murray, so get back in there.
Did he do the plumber, too?
Yeah, he did the plumber, too.
He did like, the plumber as well, yeah.
I love it.
Well, you know, you have to take your time. You take minutes out to coach people, you know, and I mean, and when you don't want to use – timeout, you use substitution. Gotcha. And that's pretty much what it is. I mean, you pull them out, you get across what you need to get across, and you put them back in the game, and that's what he had to do.
Absolutely.
Deion, zooming back out to the macro level, who is the best center in the history of Illinois men's basketball?
Well, see, I'm a power forward, so that's Kofi Coleman.
Yeah, that's
there we go. Okay, good answer.
We should have asked who the best big was.
Gotcha question, yeah. Man. Now, if you would say who's the best post player, I would have told you there is no doubt who the best post player is.
And
I play. I'm 6'8", and I was playing against people Kofi size.
Yeah, there we go.
You don't get to be the all-time leading scorer being smaller than everybody else if you don't know how to hoop.
I love it.
Stop playing. I'd average probably 30 points if I played today.
Woo!
This is true.
Yeah.
You could have.
Yeah, go ahead, Sam.
They didn't have COVID years back then either to get a fifth year in.
Man, exactly.
If you had not an
no
extra
year. For me.
Wow.
But, yeah, I mean, the spacing definitely would have been beneficial.
Yeah.
That is true.
Okay, so Dan, you literally had a front row seat to Big Ten basketball this year. Curious, what did you think of the All-Big Ten teams? Was there anyone, not just on the first team, but in general, who you felt got left off or was placed lower than they should have been?
Well, I get a vote on that Big Ten team as well, and I thought it was spot on. Mm-hmm. What was voted for is what I voted, actually. Mm-hmm. So I thought they were spot on. I thought the first team was a no-brainer. I thought, I was surprised that Jordan Ivey wasn't a consensus. It must have been maybe two or three people that did vote for him because Purdue goes nowhere without him.
Right.
And you've seen him take over games. He took over the game against us and completely turned things around. The second team I thought was also really good. I mean, I know that Trent had to be on that second team. And then to honor Alfonso with being on the third team, you could have gone either way. I thought he could have been on the second team, but I don't think it's a shame that he's not on the second, that he ended up on the third. But if he wasn't on there, then that would have been where I would have had an issue. Everybody else, I thought, was pretty much in the right place.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we all agreed the first team was pretty.
It was a lock.
Pretty unanimous.
That might have been the easiest first team ever in the history of the Big Ten.
Ever.
Did you agree as well with the player of the year and coach of the year picks?
Yes. And I did because preseason, Wisconsin was picked 10. I mean, they were picked not even to make the NCAA tournament. It's like, really? I mean, this is Wisconsin. But for them to turn around and get a share of the Big Ten title, to watch the growth of Johnny Davis, he was really good last year as a freshman. But he won't be there next year. He'll be going in the lottery. And that's how quick a turnaround that young man made in his game. So, no, I had no problems with either of those selections.
For sure. And it is pretty awesome seeing probably three lottery guys in Ivy, Murray, and Davis in the first team, and Illinois guys getting to play those guys. That's also a great experience as well. So looking forward to the Big Ten tournament, do you have a prediction on who Illinois plays in the first few rounds, and how do you think we fare in the Big Ten tournament?
Well, I think to be honest, I think we are double champions this year. I think we'll end up facing Purdue. I think we'll end up facing Purdue again, and I think we beat Purdue in the championship. And I actually said that a few months ago when we lost to them in Champaign. I was like, here's your championship game for the Big Ten title. Mm-hmm. I think we end up playing Michigan. I do not think Indiana has enough to beat Michigan. They go through these scoring lulls, and when Davis isn't himself all the time, they really struggle and finding who they are. So I think we end up playing Michigan. That's going to be a tough game for us because it's always hard to beat someone three times. But I don't think Michigan matches up very well against us. And that's where I think the matchup pushes us forward. Now, I'll be honest with you. My biggest concern is getting past Rutgers. Mm. Rutgers is a lot like us, with the exception that they're a lot more physical than we are. But being on a neutral court and not having their fans, because, they just don't travel well, I think it becomes a home game for us, and our guys feed off of that and win that game close to 10 points.
Okay.
I just want to quickly say one thing. If you're listening to this after 10:30 a.m. tomorrow, the Indiana-Michigan game might be in here, so we might have a different score than what Dion is saying based on the prediction.
Yeah, we'll edit it so you're only correct.
Yeah, we'll do.
You thank you.
We'll add my bet.
I'll continuously update it.
Yeah, we'll make sure.
Just say Indiana wins, just so we have that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Indiana wins.
There we go, just in case.
But, yeah, Deanne, I think two interesting things that you said there. One, it's tough to beat a team three times, which hopefully fares well for us if we face Purdue. Obviously, it could help Michigan, just like 1989, they beat us the third time. One other thing, we've kind of had this debate throughout the week. Do you think that, you have teams like Indiana, Michigan, Rutgers, who are kind of on the bubble. Rutgers didn't play great in non-con. Do you think that helps teams, hurts them when they're in those situations, or does it kind of just sort of depend on the team and the culture, how they fare when they're in a sort of bubble position?
I'm sorry, I don't really understand. Are you asking if it helps them?
Do you think teams respond well to that? They play better, or do you think that pressure a lot of times at the college level can hurt teams having to play for a tournament spot?
You know, we and I'm sure you guys have heard this expression is pressure does two things. It makes diamonds or it rusts pipes. Mm-hmm. If a coach is worth his salt, his kids aren't thinking about that. They're not even caring about what's going on with the brackets. Now, of course, everybody has social media and they're looking at it. But when you're going through your everyday practices, you're working to work and get better. So I would hope that they're not paying attention to that, but it's difficult to say, well, no, it doesn't. It's not going to phase them in any shape, form, or fashion because we're all human. And I'm sure there are some players on those teams that will wilt, but most guys are competitors. And most of them, if they're anything like me and like I was, when somebody tells you you can't do something, you want to prove them wrong. Yeah. So I would think the majority of those guys are probably motivated when they hear they're in the first four out, or they hear that they're on the bubble, and even that they're in the first four in. I'm sure that probably pushes those guys to want to work harder.
Very, very well said. I'm sure every team could use a few Deion Thomases. I am curious this year. Obviously, we were very focused on winning the Big Ten tournament last year after the whole conference play. This year, we've got our conference title in the regular season. How much stock do you personally put into the Big Ten tournament? And do you think we should look at this Big Ten tournament any differently than last year, kind of given the differences in the season and given, obviously, we want to make a deep tournament run after that?
Well, of course, I didn't have the Big Ten tournament. I wish I did. When I was playing, the tournament came after my time. But, you know, last year's is last year. The teams are different. Individuals are different. The mentality is different. These guys are 1 year older. They're 1 year better as players. They're 1 year stronger as athletes. So this year is different than last year. And I think the guys will look at it. Now, the positive thing and the plus side of it is you are 1 year older. So you've gained and you've learned more from what took place last year. I think if this team had played in the NCAA tournament 2 years ago when COVID shut it down, I don't think we have the same outcome with Loyola that we did this year. So I'm not expecting them to have the same difficulties in understanding what's going on and how they need to play and how hard they need to play and how focused they need to be moving forward.
For sure.
Absolutely. I think regardless, like you still want to win that mm-hmm. tournament, right? Like Brad said in the post-game speech, like we're not done getting trophies. And so, the goal for sure in the regular season was get
you want to win every game.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to win every game. But, you know, the big picture is, as he mentioned, is winning the title,
right?
Winning the Big Ten title. And winning the Big Ten regular season, I don't know if it's more or less important than winning the Big Ten tournament. But I know having a double title is better than having none or having one.
I love that. I love that math right there. It checks out. I think so. I think we would all agree.
I would be interested.
It does nothing but propel you forward.
Yeah.
I would be interested to see. I know last year we did play in an overtime game and maybe they felt like that drained us a little bit emotionally or physically. If Brad like tweaks the lineups a little bit, given you're going to play potentially three games in 3 days, so just keep our team fresh, like maybe we see more Omar Payne over that stretch, or maybe we see more RJ Melendez and Luke Goody. Any of the freshmen.
Well, if you look at the Iowa game itself, I mean, you had all three freshmen on the floor.
Right.
You know, and playing three games in 3 days, you're going to have to use extra bodies. You're going to have to figure out how to keep everybody fresh. And not just fresh during the game, but after the game for recovery. So I would expect guys to get, I mean, the main players are going to be the main players, but I do expect guys to spell them a little bit more than normal, especially because you got a game the very next day.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But guys, I'm sorry. I got one more. If you guys.
Perfect. We had one more question for you just to kind of wrap
perfect.
It up. And
Did you think I've done this thing before?
I love it. Yeah. Just giving us a little teaser. on the tournament itself, kind of two-parter, maybe where we fall in terms of our seeding, and maybe just how far you think we go in the big dance.
That's actually a really good question, because the NCAA tournament is all built up on matchups and how you play on that day. But looking at our tournament, I mean, my understanding is winning the Big Ten tournament, the highest we could possibly get is a 2 seed. I mean, but that's all depending on who's making the selections. I mean, so I'm going to say we're getting the 2 seed. I don't know if they're going to put us on that number one line. If we are at a 2 seed, I feel pretty good about where this team could go. 2, 3, 4, 5. I don't care really who we play. When we play to the level of Illinois, there's not a team in the country that we can't beat. And as you've seen so far throughout this year, I don't care which conference it is, whether it's the ACC, Big 12, SEC, Pac-12, nobody's unbeatable. I mean, even Gonzaga has gotten drilled 3 times this year.
Yeah.
So I think as long as the guys come out and they come out and they play focused, we have the experience, the length, the depth, the shooting ability, the guard play to be able to go very far.
I love that. I think that's an answer we can all get behind. Dion, thank you so much for joining the show here today. You're more than welcome to come on anytime. Again, the ultimate bleeding orange and blue right there from Dion. Alrighty, so that was an awesome interview. Always fun talking to Dion. Legitimately the most orange and blue bleeding human being that I think you can ever talk to. So awesome interview. But let's just riff here for a couple minutes. Again, we're still riding, of course, this post Big Ten championship high. I know I am. I know certainly you guys are. I didn't have the opportunity to go to the game. I had a different experience watching back here at home with some friends, and it was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. I know you guys were on just the high of the century, kind of coming home and feeling like you had to record at 1 a.m, which was awesome. But I still feel like there's space to kind of reflect on still what's going on here as the first round of the Big Ten tournament games are on. And I can't help but think back to 2019 when we're at the United Center watching us play an overtime game against Northwestern. And I have this very specific memory of me. It's at the end of the game. I'm like, guys, we need to like stand up and get into it. It's like the Big Ten tournament. I'm like shocked that people aren't like standing up and screaming and yelling on a Wednesday night Big Ten tournament game. And now as I almost watch so pretentiously, you know, that the 12 and the 13 and the 14 seeds play each other, feeling like we're so far removed from that and it just being a lifetime ago. But I feel like it's important to reflect on that.
I almost remember. I think someone was like upset with us for standing up during overtime of a game.
There were like Michigan fans there, and it's like, this isn't your game. Yeah. Like, this is our game.
This is
like,
our
if you want to come to
nightmare.
North,
this is
if
our
you
nightmare.
Come to the land of Lincoln, first four trophy, when we send Derek Pardonoff and Andres Felice,
right,
shines like
right, right. But
stand up or shut up.
It's like these moments. It kind of puts it more in perspective because of how into it we were on a Wednesday night, and I was so pretentiously like, I see these, you know, all credit to Nebraska guys. I see these Nebraska guys after they lose the game, they're absolutely just heartbroken. I'm like, y'all weren't going to win the darn thing, right? And I totally understand. I mean, these guys are student athletes. They pour their hearts into this. They could have won, but pretentiously and braggingly, I sort of watch this game from my throne, and I say, look at us now, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, we're just so much further along. And you think about that Big Ten tournament, and we just got destroyed by Iowa the next day. And now we're beating Iowa to clinch a Big Ten title. Like, it's just,
right.
It's night and day.
And it's amazing.
It's incredible.
It's absolutely awesome. I'm wondering if there's any other just sort of...
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Number one, I know we talked a little bit with Dion about the awards, and I don't know, I think a lot of people are kind of fine with how they went, but I knew
this would happen.
But I love that it continues to put a chip on the shoulder of our entire team. Like, I love that quote about Trent saying, yeah, I didn't really care about making Big Ten and all second team. I just wanted to be defensive player of the year. Like, that just gets me going. And same thing, like, I don't know, a lot of people could say Underwood's a better coach than guard. Kofi's been a better player than Johnny Davis. And I don't know, they have the opportunity in the Big Ten tournament and in the NCAA tournament to really like to prove themselves.
I knew Johnny would either make an argument for why Underwood should be coach of the year or like find the
silver
like,
line. Yeah, I do have an argument. I mean, did Greg Gard lose his entire staff and go through injuries the way that we did? But I guess Johnny Davis missed a half against Nebraska, so that loss doesn't count, even though Nebraska didn't have their like their best player in the game. Their other player got flagranted out at the exact same time, and Alonzo Verge followed, so it's fine.
You were right. You were waiting for that. You have that opportunity. I love it. I do have a question. I understand the evidence of saying Greg Gard deserves to be the coach of the year. They were picked 10th in the Big Ten. But with all due respect, doesn't that just mean that it was bad voting in the preseason?
Yeah.
Like, just because you were picked and the deviation between 10th and 1st is the greatest difference, like, is that enough to say that that's why you should be the coach of the year? Like, is that the metric, the difference between pre- and actual season? Not saying he's still not deserving what he did with the roster turnover and developing Johnny Davis and winning all those close games, but that's just always been such an interesting metric for me to decide these awards.
Yeah, I mean, Greg Gard, I was looking at this the other day. Obviously, he developed Johnny Davis. Only one of his top five scorers stayed on this team, and his top five scorers this year, only I think one of them was in the top six last year. Brad Davison. Yeah, Davison. So, I mean, he deserves a ton of credit for that.
For sure.
But I definitely agree with, like, the just because the media got it wrong, like, why?
Why does Greg get rewarded for that?
Why does he get rewarded for the fact that, like, he had an NBA talent on his bench last year? Like, maybe you should have played Johnny Davis more last year. And, like, I don't know. How much does your college coach, is he the reason why Johnny Davis is a lottery pick, or it's because he's really athletic and good at basketball? Like, he was good enough to play on that USA U19 team. So, like, clearly there was something there where he could hang with the best of the best.
Sure.
And he's objectively going to be a lottery pick.
Right.
So, like great coaching, Greg.
If Illinois was picked 9th or 11th or 10th and Wisconsin was picked whatever else, like, does that award flip-flop on its head? Like, just an interesting thought experiment. I don't know. I just always thought that that was such an interesting, a fascinating way to sort of decide, or at least one component of the Big Ten coach of the year. But he's a good coach, and he probably ultimately deserved it. So.
Yeah, we'll take 31-9 over the last 2 years. We'll take that. Good job, Brad.
And that's a great point, Johnny, because this is also something I was sort of thinking about in between the days between Wisconsin winning their share and then Sunday, is that if you are an Illinois like basketball hater, mm-hmm. that was an incredible few days for you. Again, the record of the last 3 years,
yeah,
of Big
it was
Ten
like,
was...
it would have been 44 and 16.
44 and 16. You got guys like Io. You got guys like Kofi. You have Brad Underwood. You've got all these things going for you. You have an incredible three-year run, and you have absolutely nothing in the regular season to show for it. And if you're a hater of the Big Ten, or of Illinois, I should say, that is an incredible thing to hang your hat on. And then for us to just get to shut that down, partially because Wisconsin screwed the pooch against Nebraska, if you're an Illinois lover like us, uh-huh. feels doubly good.
Well, it was amazing that walk-on Michael Ballard was saying, like, basically tweeting at Robert, all you have to do is simply win the most games and you get a Big Ten. And then we're like, oh, yeah, how'd that work out in 2021 when we beat when we won 16 games and Michigan won 14 games.
Right.
So that was sweet to see him on Old Takes Exposed, because we end up getting the most wins in the Big Ten, getting a share of the Big Ten title. And if people want to talk about tiebreakers, we were the team that kicked Wisconsin's ass. So love to see that.
Yeah. But yeah, if you're an Illinois hater,
we would
it was
never
a nice
talk
few
about
days.
Tiebreakers.
No.
Tiebreakers
no,
are
no.
not our conversation.
Absolutely.
But, well, yeah, it's funny though. You bring it all around, and your guys' argument about there should only be one champion based off of a tiebreaker, Illinois would have been the team raising the banner.
Right.
So you guys can...
I was being sarcastic.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying, though. But like,
I unrevoke my take. I'm
yeah,
putting it
exactly.
back in.
Everyone roasted you
one
guys.
Banner.
But at the same time, now they would have been on your side.
One banner.
But one thing to just talk about, too, and reflecting on it, is these past 2 years have just been so, like... It's amazing to have that Big Ten title, because it reflected how awesome the journey was those two Big Ten seasons. And each time there were struggles, whether it was those couple of home losses in 2021, when we lost to Maryland and Ohio State, or when Io had the injury and then we come back and we win those three straight games without him, or this year, the struggles that we went through, no Kofi, or just when it seemed like we had no chance to win a Big Ten title, we did. And it's just, it's crazy to, it's just such a fun season when you look back and you're like, wow, we did this. Like, DeMonte had that putback dunk against Michigan. Coleman Hawkins, or I mean, against Northwestern, Coleman Hawkins had that fun dunk against Michigan. Like, there's so many moments over the course of those 40 games where it's like, wow, this has been an incredible ride.
Which is, I think, to Dion's point of, like, we are enjoying it now, but it won't be until many years down the line in which we really get to sort of look back and reminisce, almost kind of how we do now with, like, the Illinois-MSU football game, where it's like every year we see that pop up on Twitter or BTN, or like, I remember when we were there, 28-3, biggest comeback in school history. Like, it will take it. We get to sort of bask and reminisce in these things forever, the rest of our lives.
Yeah, now we just gotta reminisce on those tournament wins in 2022.
I would love, I would love to reminisce the hell out of, you know, a lot of tournament wins here in the next 3 weeks.
And one thing that I did think was interesting too, because I don't know, I'd never filled out who I thought the 15 best players in the Big Ten were for a third team. I was actually a little surprised to see Plummer make the third team, just because when I think about our team, there have been games where we've closed it out without him.
Right.
Like, one of the 15 best players in the Big Ten, and there are times where Brad Underwood says, you're not one of the five guys I want out there, which to me, that's a sign of strength. That's like, we're so good, we can bench Plummer and beat Michigan on the road.
Is he our, would you say he's, I know this doesn't make perfect math, but like, is he our third best player?
I mean, it's just so hard to say.
Depends on the night.
Yeah, right. It depends on the night. Like, there are times where he's our sixth or seventh player. Like, you could make the argument that, like, down the stretch, he might be our seventh or eighth guy.
Like, if he's not playing the defense, then
yeah, exactly. And it's like, and if you have a healthy and engaged Curbelo, you could say that's your third best player after Trent and Kofi. And you could also say when Granison's hitting shots, when DeMonte's playing defense, and when Coleman's playing defense, like, you could make the case for any of those guys that they should be playing. So it's
absolutely,
it's not a detriment to Alfonso. It's just a compliment to the depth that everybody had been talking about. It kind of has played out.
Right. It's a compliment to his offensive production, mm-hmm. for sure. His, mm-hmm. his incredible frequency and accuracy from range. But you're right. Like, the defensive, and he'll probably tell you that, right, like, defense is not a strength. But I will tell you, like, he's not in there down the stretch as an incredible three-point shooter to get you a bucket because of the defense. And I think that's a very valid point, as biased as we may be.
Yeah, but it was cool to see that Iowa game. Brad's like, you know what? I'll just go small, and I'll go Plummer, Trent, and Curbelo. And maybe that was a function of Granison being injured and he needed someone to stretch the floor. But it's just cool because I feel like in the stretch of winning a tournament or making the Final Four, you're going to need to win in different ways. So hopefully we remember that Sweet 16 game as the game that Alfonso Plummer hit 8 threes. And then we talk about the Elite Eight game where Alfonso Plummer was on the bench for the last 10 minutes, but Curbelo and Trent took us home and Kofi just dominated. Like, hopefully we just win in six different ways.
Something interesting. I think this is going to be Plummer's first tournament ever, I believe.
Yeah, that's, I don't think Utah was in it.
Yeah, I don't think they've made it since the year before he joined.
Yeah, that is relevant.
The more you know.
Yeah, it's also going to be all the freshmen's first tournament. You know that they've never played in the high school tournament. Anything else? Again, I just want to give you guys the space because I know you were at the game. Like, and I know that I know, Johnny, you've still been like dreaming about that every night, just being there. I know I can hear you mumbling that, I'm sure, in your sleep. So I guess anything else that you feel like is just important to highlight? I'm very jealous that you guys were there. It was very fun to watch it here. I know, like, when we did win it, like, me and I was watching with a couple friends, we did what Brad and the other coaches did. We just like bear hugged, you know, for a few seconds. We kind of missed the first court storming seconds because we were just like so honestly emotional and like hugging, and it was so exciting. But anything else that you guys just want to riff about, it just being in such an incredible sporting environment?
I got one thing. I just want to talk about Kansas State fans.
That is very relevant to the question that I set you up for the last 60 seconds. Go ahead, Josh.
They're the worst. they think that Underwood's still going. There's a post that was just posted. We got tagged into it. Why not Underwood? His buyout is something like $8 million and his salary is $4 million. I know we messed it up twice by passing him over, but that wouldn't change my love of my school, my town, and my state. That kind of money is within our budget if we want to use it.
K-State logic. We already got one of their former coaches, so why can't we just do it again?
Rent-free, Josh. Rent-free. What if I told you I posted that just to get you all upset about it?
Yeah, your name is Wildcatter.
It is funny, though. How did you know that? It is funny, though, because I don't know. I feel like we all have a lot of trust in Josh Whitman that if there was going to be a monster offer from someone, that he would do everything in his power to keep Brad Underwood as the head coach of Illinois, because that's kind of how he swooped in with Oklahoma State, was they kind of lowballed him and Josh was like, okay, we'll take your guy. And I remember my brother and I will sometimes talk about this stuff and he's like, you know, Louisville could make like a huge offer or something like that, or Maryland. I'm like, he's not going there. And it brings me back to something that Sam always talks about. If you want to just like, he grew up in Kansas. Like,
oh yeah. I mean, he grew up in Kansas, like, kind of in the middle of nowhere, doing Pizza Hut parking lot fights. He was in a cattle show. He spent how many years in Macomb? 11 years in Macomb, Illinois. Like,
careful.
I'm sorry to our Western Illinois listeners, but I mean, I think he's a pretty content guy in Champaign. And Josh Whitman, I think football's good precedent. Like, Ryan Walters did great. He paid Ryan Walters. I think, you know, Brad Underwood is kind of in a similar situation where Josh Whitman will do whatever it takes.
He's gonna get some money.
Yeah, and ultimately, I think he's also about winning. Mm-hmm. And I think, why would he leave to go rebuild somewhere for like 3 years just to maybe get as good of an opportunity? Like, he just won a Big Ten title and was a one seed last year. Like,
he's gonna get his bag.
Like his comment about recruiting was like, he's just so confident we're gonna kick people's ass. We have this culture. He's not gonna leave. Like,
yeah,
Bill Self did that for Kansas, but like, that was Bill Self. I think Brad knows this is his.
Brad's
final
a little
job.
Older
yeah,
as well.
Exactly.
He's a little older, and I do feel like, I don't think he was bullshitting when he said that it was his dream job when he wrote that down on the post-it note. And I think that now that, you know, there's a Big Ten tournament, or I should say a Big Ten title, and all these accomplishments that he's racking up here at Illinois, Josh is going to back the Brinks truck up for Underwood, and I don't think he wants to go elsewhere. But very exciting. Anything else on that?
Yeah, end? I mean, I was going to ask you guys. I don't know. I feel like we've covered most of it. We covered it most in our like fever dream of a podcast after we came right home from being there. But I have to say, the day or two after was just like watching any highlight you could get your hands on, and yes, being as little productive as possible in terms of actual obligations, instead being like, you know what, I'm going to listen to Brad's press conference, or I'm going to see anything that's like on
I'm
Twitter.
I'm so glad, Johnny, you're not like a brain surgeon, as you say, like, I didn't feel like being productive. Yeah. You know, like, very important. But yeah, every time like a new thing came out, like when you sent the radio clip, I was like so excited to listen.
Oh my god, chills!
I was like, yes, all right, here's like alternate. And I know we tweeted out like, send us your videos, and I just watched like all of those like over and over and over, each perspective.
I think people thought there was an expectation of like us creating some type of montage, which I assume that the Illinois basketball account is doing. That was just for me. And
no, we'll throw some Green Day music in the background.
Yeah, I'll do some like iMovie thing.
Yes.
Sounds terrible.
I love it. With some incredible transitions.
But this was seriously just a selfish thing for me, and hopefully other fans enjoy looking at our thread if we're trying to find some basketball content or some content of people celebrating. I mean, I still watch This Is Related, the Cubs World Series, like when the Red Lion celebration, or everyone storming out to Green Street at Joe's, or just I will watch any celebration video of my team winning just because I will remember how I felt in that exact same moment, and it's the most pure reaction you'll probably ever have.
I love it. Absolutely love it. All right, we've got a lot, hopefully a lot of great content coming for you soon here this week in the Big Ten tournament and the tournament itself. Hopefully giving us some quick hitters after each game during the Big Ten tournament. So we'd love to have, you know, three of those episodes. And then we'll have at least one episode before the big dance kicks off, probably with one or all of the Brain Trust with Robert and Tyler. And then hopefully some episodes after, before each tournament game You know, the more episodes, I think, the better. I think that math checks out there. We'd like to have, what is it, like 9 episodes or whatever.
And if you don't think so, you're not listening at this point. So, right. Screw you.
So, yeah. So, awesome. So, we'll catch you soon. We will be playing either Indiana or Michigan. All right, real quick. Who are we playing? Johnny, go. One word. What team? Who are we playing?
Indiana.
Sam.
Michigan.
I'm going to go Michigan. Josh?
Michigan.
All right,
I just want it to be Indiana. All
right, excellent. We will catch you on the next episode of The Boardroom, everyone. Thanks for listening. ILL.